Lehigh Valley Public Radio is proud to present HealthBeat, a spotlight on healthcare in the Lehigh Valley, produced in conjunction with the Dorothy Ryder Poole Healthcare Trust and the Ryder Poole Foundation.
Good evening and welcome to HealthBeat, a program that examines how we as a community can create a healthier Lehigh Valley. I'm Greg Caponia, along with Edward Meehan, the Executive Director of the Ryder Poole Foundation. Hi, Edward.
Hello, Greg. Always good to be with you.
Thank you, sir. This evening, we welcome Mr. Brian Abel, the Operations Manager of Integrated Care Coordination at the Lehigh Valley Health Network. Tonight's program will concentrate on vaccines, some in general, and of course, the COVID-19 vaccine. Welcome, gentlemen.
Always good to be with you, Greg.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Brian, could you please describe your role and define integrated care at LVHN?
Sure. Hello, everyone. My name is Brian Abel. I am the operations manager for the Department of Integrated Care Coordination. So just a little bit of an overview about integrated care coordination. It's an umbrella department that is made up of three bodies. So we have an inpatient care management body, which kind of functions as taking care of the patient while they're admitted, transitioning them through their whole pathway of care while they're inpatient. So that's one umbrella. We have our care transitions and navigation umbrella where, you know, that division of the department takes care of the patient once they get out of the hospital and ensures that, you know, they transition, you know, back to the home or whatever their discharge destination is. Appropriately make sure they're discharged of all their meds and stuff and make sure they got help at home to ensure that they don't readmit again. And then we have, where I live, the population health space, our community care team division, where we do complex care management for patients. So those are those patients that have complex comorbidities that may also have other things going on, social determinants of health things such as social issues. One of the big ones, transportation, BH issues they may have, or they even may have some polypharmacy issues. So that's a multidisciplinary team where I sit. I'm the operations manager. I have oversight of the community health worker discipline, which is a position that is growing in attention across the public health and population health space. Very innovative position that I enjoy overseeing. And that's just
terrific.
A little bit about my role.
Terrific. Well, you mentioned social determinants of health, which we have many discussions on HealthBeat, and dovetails right into the perfect conversation about vaccines as a social determinant of health and vaccine hesitancy. In 2019, the World Health Organization listed vaccine hesitancy as one of the top 10 threats to global health. So this just isn't a problem within some of our communities. It seems to be a global issue. Edward?
Yeah, Greg. You know, we're learning a lot about social determinants of health, and we're learning a lot about the fact that while healthcare is important, it only accounts for about 20% of the health of a person or a community. And genetics has a role to play, but about 70% has to do with behavior and environment. And so what's happened with COVID in particular is that the pandemic has really ripped the veil off of all the underlying conditions having to do with disparities in health and the disparities that exist within social determinants based on race, ethnicity, income, geography, education. And so, as you point out, it's worldwide. We're certainly deeply concerned about vaccination in the Lehigh Valley. But hesitancy is something that we need to talk about, and we need to get people more comfortable. But it's not unusual for human beings to be hesitant. There are folks who will say, give me the correct information and I'll act on it. There are a lot of us who will say, well, let me check and see what my neighbor did. I wonder what my brother did. Or let me wait and see how it goes. Many of us are not that adventurous. So when you have something new like a pandemic and then you have a vaccine to address the pandemic, the hesitancy is a challenge to try to get people at a comfort level and accurate information, but to a certain extent to be expected. Now, how do we help people through their hesitancy to get them to a place where they realize that it would be in their best interest and their family's best interest to indeed get vaccinated?
Brian, in which communities in the Lehigh Valley are we seeing some hesitancy, or is there?
So as far as the COVID-19 vaccine, I believe early on when, you know, the vaccine actually came out, we've seen a lot of hesitancy across all the communities. I feel as though it didn't matter what you look like, almost everyone were questioning about, you know, this vaccine thing kind of happened kind of fast. This isn't something that we're all used to. I think, you know, everyone was hesitant. I don't think there's a siloed community that wasn't hesitant about getting the vaccine outside of, you know, those stakeholders that, if we want to call them a community, we can, it's out of those stakeholders that were public figures and were acting for a cause. And, you know, they took that first step with hopes that, you know, because their public face and their figure, you know, their status showed that I got the vaccine. Let's hope that I can encourage other people to get the vaccine. So I think it was seen in every community at first. But right now, as far as current state, I feel as though that hesitancy still exists. But due to the large shift in the trend towards that of, I'm not so sure, but where can I get my vaccine? I think it's hard to identify where the hesitancy really is. You know, I feel as though once we do the due diligence and create more access, as, you know, more vaccines become available, I feel as though after we vaccinate that first wave of all of those individuals in the population, because there's a lot more that wants to get vaccine now, all of those in the population that want to get vaccine, then we'll be able to see a little bit better who is it out there that is truly hesitant about the vaccine, and how do we figure out how to address those barriers or fill in those gaps to reduce that hesitancy.
Are there any communities where the people still are, quite frankly, hesitant?
What I can see, I think there's more so communities that are trying to find access.
Okay.
There's huge knowledge deficit around criteria 1A that is defined by the CDC. I feel as though because of health literacy, of course, and not being able to understand some levels of content, some individuals don't know that they're actually eligible. They're limited in access because of knowledge, if that makes sense.
So what does LVHN do to give them access to this knowledge?
So what we're doing current state is we're collaborating with the trusted places within the community that have those relationships or have those touch points within the areas that we serve. So we know that we can't sit there and demand people to show up at one of our geographic locations, you know, because some people may be socially isolated, right? Some people may not have the means of transportation. Some people may be out of reach. So we got to work to our best capacity to, you know, meet those individuals where they're at. So we're collaborating with these community-based organizations and other entities within the community. And we're coming up with collaborative messaging that is appropriate for those demographics and those populations within that community. And we're showing them where we are, and we're trying to spread that message to the best of our capability. But, like, word of mouth travels fast. You know, they're going to know. You know, we did do a press release, we did do Media Day through our first collaboration that we had with an organization. So it is getting out there. And, you know, we're not the only ones doing this, right? Other health systems and other health entities are also doing these community-based collaborations to not only spread access to vulnerable populations, but, you know, also create awareness of, you know, the efficacy of vaccine and its effectiveness and how it's helping to reduce COVID rates.
I was recently in another part of the country, and I noticed that the vaccine hesitancy there was far more increased than what you're saying in the Lehigh Valley. What are the typical reasons why somebody might be nervous about getting this vaccine? Because we're looking to get, what is it, 70% herd immunity? What's the figure again?
I believe 70%, Greg. I think that's right.
I believe that's right around there, yeah. Ed, I don't know if you wanted to take the stab at this question first.
Yeah, Brian, thanks. Greg, I think, first of all, we reeled at COVID and, you know, our responses, our national, societal, you name it, everybody's responses were, you know, how do we get our arms around this? How do we deal with this? And it's been a long year, and there's been a lot of misinformation. There's been a lot of conflicting information. It's been hard for people to understand the politicization of a disease. I think to a great degree, we'll go back to what we were saying before. If you can give folks accurate information from a trusted source, then they can act on it. But if there's a tremendous amount of information, they're going to look to, you know, comfortable sources of information that they have. And if comfortable sources of information are saying, you know, here's what we know about the vaccine, here's what you can look to that can be helpful to you in terms of accurate information, that's great. But you have to admit there's an awful lot of misinformation that's been spread around. Hard to live those things down. So overcoming some of the noise, I think, is really important to have accurate information. Then secondly, I'd say information is not enough. We have to really do a much better job, and by the we, I mean societally, of listening to communities that are generally been disenfranchised or somehow discounted so that we can hear accurately what do they need in order to adopt this new innovation, this idea of a vaccine. What do they need to make that happen? Some of the things that I've heard from CDC and from Ad Council just about how to go about influencing individual behaviors to acknowledge the concerns. Yes, we understand. Yes, public health has not always been a credible source for many communities. Yes, large pharmacological or healthcare system writ large has not always necessarily been a friend to your neighborhood. But acknowledging the fact that with that, there still needs to be something to be done about COVID. And then how do you appeal to people's sense of why you would want to take the opportunity to get a vaccine? How do you think about the moments you've missed, the grandchildren you've missed? Think about how you're protecting your loved ones if you get a vaccine. And it's your choice. You know, I mean, no one's saying you sure must get a vaccine. But think about it and just say, get some accurate source of information, talk with your credible messengers who you rely on for accurate information. How do we do that? As Brian was saying, getting with those trusted messengers and those opinion leaders in communities is really important so that we can hear and learn and know better how to be responsive to appropriate concerns that people have.
Do you think the speed in which the vaccine was developed is causing some people to say, I'm going to wait and see what happens?
I think so. It's just very typical for any new innovation for it to take a while to move across an entire population. There are people who like any idea that they've ever heard. Great idea, I'm going for it. We all know folks like that. You got to have the latest techie piece of equipment or the newest car or whatever it might be. And then there's a fair number of people who will say, well, let me just test it out a little bit and see how that feels. And then the great majority of folks will say, well, I'm just going to wait and see. So I think the speed at which the vaccine became available, combined with the fact that people, like it or not, have become very accustomed to just hunkering down, and now there's this opportunity for a vaccine that says, wait a minute, maybe I can start to get back out in the world a little bit more, takes a little while for people to absorb.
Brian, do you see people asking questions about mRNA, even though we all don't really know what this means? It's a new technology, or is it?
I feel as though that a lot of people don't look into that level of detail, to be honest. Like, to Ed's point, a lot of people make decisions just because they do. I don't even think that a lot of people are going in. If I can share my personal story, say, for instance, right, I would consider myself second wave. I bought in. After I looked around and I was like, all of my colleagues are vaccinated, my employees are vaccinated, everyone's vaccinated but me. And my mom was vaccinated, my aunt was vaccinated, my uncle was vaccinated. I was like, what's my deal? I have access to it. I should go get vaccinated. I remember to this day, because of whatever hoopla I was listening to, right? And I'm educated and I have a background in public health. I'm well-versed to this. I have a research background. I understand. But I still chose to listen to whatever was comfortable, to Ed's point, right? I listened to the hoopla. I swore up and down. You know, you hear the myths, oh, people with shellfish allergies can't take Pfizer, XYZ. I swore up and down, yeah, I'm going to get Moderna. I'm going to get Moderna. Walked up. I got Pfizer. I didn't know. You didn't know. But I wasn't going to turn down the vaccine right now. She asked me, do I still want it? I wasn't going to risk going back out there and knowing I don't have any layers of protection. So I just got it.
So the knowledge deficit, really, people don't care about what type of vaccine they get once they decide to make the decision to get vaxxed. They all seem to be pretty safe.
Yeah, they're safe. I think we should not equivocate. They're safe. Yes, people are going to have, you know, some issues with maybe a little soreness at the site of the injection, or you might have some chills or something. But I've talked with dozens of people who worry more about, you know, the 12 hours where they're not going to feel very well, or the mild headache they might have, versus saying, or you could get COVID, you know, it's safe.
So how do we get the message out to simply people who cannot get a ride to get the vaccine, for example? I know some people who are 75 years old couldn't get there. Are there ways for us to help people get to these mass vaccination sites?
Yes. So we're bringing them to them. We're working diligently. There are multiple initiatives that are working on ways to not only go to hot spots in the community, but also take it to those skilled nursing facilities and those people that are bedbound. We started with like high rises and senior centers and skilled nursing facilities, and we're just expanding on this work. But we are focusing on those people that can't actually have transportation to reach one of our hotspot areas or a hospital location to get vaccinated, knowing that, you know, they are an underserved population. They are some of our immediate focuses.
So do you do research to try to find out how to message different ethnic communities, for example? I mean, are Hispanic communities, say, more or have a different opinion than maybe an African-American community or a Native community?
So what we do is we try and engage a diverse subset. We try and engage everyone, and we try and get a gauge of where they're at. We don't necessarily assume what they know, what they don't know, what they're into, what they're not into, if they want to collaborate, if they don't want to collaborate. We go in truly going in to try and be a partner, right? We're trying to do this collaboration. We got this thing going on, this pandemic. No one likes it. Help us understand your feelings about the pandemic. Help us understand your feelings about vaccines. You know, can you help us help the community? That's realistically have been our approach. And, you know, that's going to continuously be our approach and how we try and engage those diverse populations. We're going to go to those trusted leaders within those populations and see, you know, what do we not know? Because like Ed said, we just got to listen. Not everything is going to be published in literature because, you know, some things are just kept within their small circles. Some racial groups stay very isolated and it's not to share. It's within their culture. So we're going to go to them. We're going to come to them with respect and humility. We're going to try and engage and figure out the knows and what we don't know and try and work on what we don't know to help and build on what we're doing.
Brian, what advice would you have for a person who's inside one of these at-risk communities who is a believer in the vaccine, has received the vaccine, and is talking with family relatives who might be 65 plus who have some hesitancy because of some real past historical issues? How do you hit somebody in a way that connects with them inside your own family or community?
All individuals can do, you know, honestly, to me, I don't think there's magic words to people are going to do what they want to do anyway, right? I don't necessarily think that they're magic words. You can empower this individual and say, listen, you know, this vaccine is shown very, you can show them the facts. To Ed's point, show them the facts. This vaccine has shown this level of efficacy. It's worked. You saw me take it. I'm fine. You know, I'm not telling you to take it, but, you know, it works. All you can do is present the facts. You can share your experience. But to me personally, I don't think me telling someone that you have to do it is going to convince them. If I can show them the outcome of my result of doing it, my story, my life story, like I went, I was fine. It shows 95% efficacy. I don't have much to worry about. You don't see me present sick, and I'm not at risk for COVID. You get what I mean? I can show you proof. It's been so much damage done between all the misleading information, some true information that they're hearing from down the street. I don't think someone's going to listen to one more thing. I think it's the decision that they're going to make, but I think people make decisions off of, you know, what they see, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and Brian, let me piggyback on that. Greg, you know, this we have trouble remembering sometimes, but this isn't our first rodeo when it comes to pandemics and when it comes
right.
to communicable diseases. And some of us are old enough to remember tuberculosis and polio, and a lot of us are old enough to remember HIV/AIDS when it first happened. And so there are just general things that we know. People will cue to action, get a vaccine, if they believe that the disease is severe, that it's real and it can hurt you. They'll trigger to action if they believe they're susceptible to getting the disease. They'll trigger to action to get a vaccine if they think the vaccine will be of benefit to them. They'll cue to action if the vaccine they believe is of benefit to them and the hassle factor is reduced, that the barriers are reduced, that it's not that difficult for them to get the vaccine. And the trigger for all that, it's severe, it's bad, you can get it. There's a way to avoid that bad thing that you can get, and we're going to make it easy for you. And that messenger has to come from a cue to action from somebody like a trusted messenger, a pastor, a deacon, a leader, a recognized leader in the neighborhood, maybe the matriarch of the family, or maybe it's an aunt who says, hey, I did it, I got it, and I'm good to go. And again, it's not judgmental. It's just people need to decide for themselves. But right. Think about the moments missed with loved ones. Can we get together on 4th of July?
Can we get together?
Or, hey, you're not back to work yet? Get that vaccine. Maybe you can get back to work.
And can you travel yet, right?
Right.
Yeah.
People wanting to travel.
Edward, do you see any similarities with, say, polio? Or I was really young when the polio vaccine came. All I know is we stood in line for a while to take a sugar cube. And boy, we jumped on it as soon as we could get it. I remember I was a kid. My dad was like, here, take this.
Sure. Well, you and I are about the same age, but a lot of the research on people's beliefs about taking an action, a health action, come from that social science research from way back when. How do you enable people to say, this is not hard, we'll all meet at the high school on Saturday morning and we'll all get our sugar cube? And how do we get a message out to the community that says, we're all doing this, it's a good thing, and it has a benefit? And what's really, let me just piggyback on that, Greg.
Sure.
What's really amazing is, with polio, with TB, you know, one shot and you're done. With COVID, one shot or two shots and you're done. This gets so much more complicated with social determinants of health when you're talking about things that are not one shot, but things you have to do every day, not smoke, take your blood pressure medication, watch your diet.
Right.
Those things are incredibly complicated. And so we've got to really get smart about COVID and get a vaccine and get people to overcome the hesitancy. But the channels of communication we create with the neighborhoods and with communities, yes, and with trusted leaders ought to then not be dismissed, but should be embraced and say, okay, we tackled that vaccination issue. What can we now do about diabetes in your community? What can we now do about pick a health issue or pick a social determinant of health issue? That's going to be the opportunity that comes out of this challenge.
Brian, do you see the issues that we're dealing with today with COVID-19 helping you move the social determinants of health forward in integrated health in the future?
Yes, I do. I think this learning from our initiatives in trying to get people COVID vaccines is not only are we creating, we can't fix our issues that we have with the health system in our communities overnight, but, you know, one positive intervention is a step in the positive direction. That's the first thing. So us doing these partnerships and getting out in the community and going to these trusted sites and creating this positive feedback for the community member that they remember, you know, when I couldn't get my COVID shot and this spot finally opened up because of this collaboration, it made my life because now I don't have to worry about COVID. Once we create that first positive image, it allows us to build. And not only that is, you know, as we're doing this stuff for COVID and we're finding these people that want to be vaccinated and we're registering people, We're getting them the service that they need, but we're also learning who they are and where they live, if that makes sense.
Sure, you're building a trust bond.
Right. We're building this pipeline so we know who you are. So if you were eligible within criteria 1A, there's a subset of conditions that fall into that. I know that you're at risk for a lot of other social determinants of health, and you live in an underserved area, so there's other environmental triggers that are impacting your overall health. So I know from there, you know, I'm just finding you. It's very easy to look at a map and say, that's a hotspot area. But it's very hard to say, who are those exact patients that actually need help? And how do we find them before they end up at the emergency room when they're in critical or catastrophic conditions?
Edward, 100 million shots in 60 days or so. Leave us with a positive thought.
Americans are counterpunchers. It seems like as a society, we get punched in the nose and say, wait a minute, we've been punched in the nose. And it takes us a little while to respond, but when we do, we go big. And so 100 million shots in 60 or so days, plenty more to come. The machinery is getting in place. The ability to have vaccine availability is getting better by the day. And I think we have the ingenuity and the ability and the will to deal with this and go forward.
Edward, I know that the Poole Foundation has been driving for years on social determinants of health and trying to get to these underserved communities to get them healthier. Congratulations on what is really becoming sort of a focal point here, perhaps through an unfortunate circumstance. And Brian, nice job with all those vaccination sites and reaching out to the public.
Yeah, man, it's a team effort, but we're hard at work, and we're gonna keep the foot to the pedal. We still got a lot of work to do. We're not done.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for being on Health Beat this evening.
Always good to be with you, Greg.
Thanks for having me.
You are listening to HealthBeat, and this is WDIY. Have a great evening.
Lehigh Valley Public Radio is proud to present HealthBeat, a spotlight on healthcare in the Lehigh Valley, produced in conjunction with the Dorothy Ryder Poole Healthcare Trust and the Ryder Poole Foundation.